You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Blow the horn, go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champ.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama,
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
None of them guys are playing against. In fact, it's their split. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Hey guys, this is Dave riding solo, and we're going to power through a breakdown of this game and a couple other sort of top of mind topics. Appreciate you all tuning in. This episode might be a little different in terms of some of the content that I want to cover. And like I said, certainly a solo show. Which itself is different. So before we get into, you know, Saban's sort of death march through the Mississippi schools, which we saw, you know, episode two on Saturday, I just want to give a super shout out to the fans and listen. I even hesitate to use the word fans, but the listeners that are out there that support us, you reach out to us via Facebook, via iTunes, via email, multiple platforms, and we've had just an honor of an opportunity to meet some of you. Not a whole big number, but you know, 3, 4, 5 that we connect with very regularly, and I've had the opportunity to meet some of those folks. And you know, this past weekend was just such an example. We had a wonderful opportunity, I had a wonderful opportunity to meet up with one of our listener campaign supporters by the name of Bill, and he invited us over to his tailgate. And I tell you, this dude's a big deal. And so I was a little bit intimidated going to his tailgate, but it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. One of the most gracious, friendly individuals I've ever met. And, you know, he was genuinely interested in the podcast and wanting to know our backstory and wanting to know about us. And it was just a phenomenal experience. And so I just wanted to share that. We appreciate you all so much. I tell you what, I had such a good time, and the hospitality was just off the charts. The introductions, the people that were there, and just the camaraderie and was just phenomenal. I so wanted to go back after the game, but I didn't want to feel like I was wearing out my welcome. And so I just want to give a mad shout out to Bill and his family and the hospitality that they showed. It was phenomenal. I had an opportunity for the first time to try a little Clyde Mays, and I would highly recommend that. And I've actually went out to after the game, met up with some folks at Sessions Bar and sampled a little more Clyde Mays. So that was a phenomenal experience all around, and just personifies the opportunity we have to meet you fans and you know, via in person or email and whatnot. And we so, you know, so greatly appreciate it. So why don't we flip gears and jump into the game? That was such a just a really good experience, and I wanted to touch base on that. And so Saturday, Alabama, man, it was a scorcher. I there were a couple times during the game I thought, man, I gotta like get in heat shape or something, because this game was just brutal. But Alabama put it on Mississippi or Ole Miss, you know, certainly from an offensive perspective, 59 points. But the defense, 31 points. I think Saban, like if I could paraphrase, you know, Saban, I think what he said in the post-conference is really how, you know, I'd almost want to start the podcast is, you know, I guess it was a win, so I guess it was good, but there's a lot of things that, you know, a lot of things that we can work on. And so certainly happy with the win, certainly happy to be 5-0, certainly happy with the conference win, especially in the Western Division. But there's a lot of stuff to work on here. So why don't we talk about the good, and then we can, you know, which is primarily the offense, and then we can, you know, shift gears and talk about, you know, the less good, which is the defense. Look, Tua was off the charts. There's just no way to – there's no two ways to break that down. You know, he's 26 of 36 for 418, six touchdowns. Again, off the charts. He's had three games in a row where he, you know, with five touchdowns and six touchdowns. That's got to be some sort of record. Certainly it is at Alabama. I've read a number of articles, and I can't quote all the numbers, but when you compare, you know, all this, you know, the touchdown leader, the yardage leaders that we've had at Alabama, McCarron holds a lot of those records. Tua is claiming a lot of those records, and he's played approximately half the games that McCarron has. It is amazing. It is mind-boggling what we're seeing from Tua, and we should just enjoy the absolute hell out of it, because, you know, this is going to be his last year, and there are people that openly discuss he may potentially be the best quarterback that's ever played college football. And so we can't get in the expectation that we're going to see someone like him again pretty soon, because in our lifetimes, we may not. Devonta Smith, Smitty, he had a career day by halftime. He ended up with 11 catches for 274 yards and five touchdowns. I think I saw where his stats in this game and maybe his stats in the first half were better than his stats his entire freshman season. And, of course, his freshman season, everyone remembers him for the touchdown against Georgia in the national title game. And of course you remember that, but he also had another game winner against Mississippi State late in the game. And had he not caught that, and that's going to be the biggest catch of his career that people forget about. But had he not caught that pass, we may not have competed for the national title. And so Devonta really came out strong against Ole Miss. I'll tell you, in hindsight's 2020, and you can, you know, ignore this, but there were two points that, you know, sort of leading up to the game, I wish I'd gotten on Facebook, or I wish I'd put out there. There were two ideas that I had before the game. One was that Talia would get a lot of game action and that he would throw at least a touchdown. And so that one didn't happen. But I'm putting it out there in honesty and sharing that's one of the key thoughts that I had prior to the game, that we were going to see a lot of Talia. And subsequently, I'll share that I have thoughts for that, and I'm going to release that sort of in an insider podcast or an insider audible that will only be available to our listener supporters. So it's not too late to do that, and we'll have that out to the team. Sort of a deeper explanation or exploration of that. But the second point that I thought is that, you know what, Devonta is going to have a big day. I think we are, as much as Saban says otherwise, I think that we may well intentionally go to Devonta against Ole Miss. And if you look at the stats last week against Southern Miss, Devonta had two catches, but they were manufactured catches. They were, you know, run behind the line of scrimmage, and Tua sort of throws the ball up in the air. It's almost a handoff, but because the ball leaves, you know, it goes forward and it leaves to his hand as opposed to just an outstretched hand. It's considered a pass. And so the two Devonta catches last week were of that variety, very much forced plays. And so here, to really look for him in big spots, for him to have 11 catches when you've got guys like Judy and Ruggs and Waddle on the roster, I think there's a little intentionality and going after Devonta. And so 11 catches, 274, five touchdowns. It's just amazing. Sitting in the stands watching that game, at one point, the gentleman sitting in front of me, I said, I think that's his fourth. And he goes, oh, there's no way that's his fourth. That's just his third. And I said, that's fine. And so a few minutes later, Devonta had his fifth, and a guy, in front of him just sort of exasperatedly, shouted out, that's his fifth touchdown. And the gentleman sort of turned back to me and said, yeah, I think that was four before, and that's five now. Just an amazing. And then sort of one of the biggest trivia questions that the future may hold is, on Tua's six touchdown day, who did those passes go to? And so you think of the plethora of receivers, you would list a lot of names before you got to Miller Forrestall. And so Devonta had five and Miller Forrestall, had one. And so that's how they tabulated the six. So there's probably, an opportunity to win drinks in the future on that. And I'll say this about, Jerry Jeudy had eight catches for 84 yards, and damn, that just looks so pedestrian next to Devonta's, sort of billboard, buster numbers. But Jerry Jeudy certainly had a good day. Henry Ruggs got a little dinged with, looked like he had, I think a hip pointer was the injury that they called for. He went into the tent. He was in the tent for a long time. He was on the ground for a long time. And so there were certainly cause for concern there. Went into the tent and he came back out and was sort of behind the players for a little bit. And then when they did sort of one of those mass huddles on the sideline, he was running up and down the sideline. Looked like he was working on his acceleration. How comfortable or what was the level of discomfort there? He certainly was well enough to come back into the game. And I think he played a little special teams there as well. I'll call it a funny little observation. Certainly not funny that Ruggs was down. But while he was down and where he was down, anytime there's a TV, and this is sort of an advent over the last, three, four, 5 years, anytime there's a game on TV, especially one of the larger networks, they have an official or a sideline official that has this big sort of sign or clock that counts down the TV timeout. So everyone, the officials, the players, they know where they are relative to being in a commercial break. And certainly the fans can look at that too. And there's sort of a designated place on the sideline where that individual stands. And he steps out, five or six yards, and then holds the sign and then sort of steps back. Well, where Ruggs went down was right where that guy comes out with the sign. And he must have just been the biggest sort of meathead guy. He didn't sort of, hey, there's a player down on the ground, so let me move a little bit. And so he literally came out and sort of planted his sign right there at Ruggs's foot. And the officials, or not the officials, but the medical staff that were sort of treating Ruggs were encumbered by this individual. And so finally, I think he realized, oh, there's something going on, and he moved. But I thought that was the biggest sort of, government job, equivalent. That was the biggest sort of, bonehead decision that guy could make. And there's a few of us in the stand that got a big laugh of that. I told someone, I said, well, that guy is where he's supposed to be. He was told to stand there and walk out 5 yards and stand there and don't do anything but that. And, he thought he was in the right because Ruggs is not the one that was supposed to be there, although Ruggs was the down player. So kind of got a kick out of that. But at any rate, Ruggs is back, and certainly with the bye week, he's going to be back up to form, and we want to see him running those slants and scoring those long touchdowns. I want to talk about the running game. And I tell you what, and I say this sort of half kidding, but I do more and more. I do wonder, did Najee hear the podcast a couple of weeks ago when I had the idea, even when he had that big game against South Carolina and sort of that highlight reel, and now he's going to be, immortalized in the Daniel Moore print for, that hurdle. But that was off a pass. I made the comment in the podcast after that he wasn't running the hole. He wasn't hitting the holes, and that Brian Robinson, who was more aggressive in hitting the hole, following the line, following the blockers, that he was going to take over the starting job. And ever since that, Najee has been a different running back. And you can go back and look at Southern Miss when he ran for 100 yards one of his leading rushing days of his career. And then also look at this Ole Miss tape. He ran hard. He ran in the hole and followed his blocks. And there wasn't a lot of sort of dancing and sort of bouncing it out. I talk about him being sort of the sports car that wants to get to the open lane. And he'll bounce, 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 and then get tackled kind of at the line of scrimmage. And if he'll just follow the hole, and this is something Saban has said, if he'll just follow the hole and let sort of the defenders come to the blockers, then that'll make the line look better and his performance will look better too. And Najee, the last couple of weeks, I'm convinced, has been a better running back the last 2 weeks than he has probably in his career. I'll say that. And then I'll also say, Brian Robinson has continued to do what he does, and he certainly had an outstanding day himself. He is a hard physical runner. I don't think that, athletically he's as talented as Najee, and in space he may not be as talented as Najee. But in terms of lining up and hitting the hole and moving the chains, Brian Robinson is about as good as you're going to see. And again, we've done this before, but what's interesting when you look at Najee and his 9 carries and Brian Robinson his 10, that's 19. Najee 71 yards, B-Rob 60, so that's 131. And then together they averaged 6.9 carries. And so 19 carries, 131 yards, 6.9 yards per carry. That's an impressive performance by those two, combined by those two running backs. Threw in 3 catches for 9 yards. And that's a good day from, call it a feature back. And we just have two guys sort of splitting that role. But I think we're seeing a progression of the running game. These guys looked very good with their opportunities. And I'll say limited, 19 carries between the two, limited opportunities. But they both, I think, looked, very, very good. And I thought the offensive line is continuing to progress and continuing to progress. At risk of sort of patting ourselves on the back too much, I thought Deontay Brown did exactly what we expected Deontay Brown to do. We talked about this last week. He came in, I want to say it was late second. It may have been sort of early third, but it was right when we talked about it was before the starters were going to come out, but a series or two. And I think it was 2, maybe 3 series before the starters were going to come out. So maybe it was third quarter. Deontay came out and he started at left guard. And so, which is where he played last year. And so he came in for Evan and then he moved to right tackle and or right guard. And so he played both guard positions. And at that point he was in for Landon Dickerson. And then he continued to play on the line with the second team, which is right about what we predicted last week. I noted a couple times when he was in the game, especially I think at the right guard position, we ran 2 or 3 times right at him or right behind him. And so I think we're definitely sort of testing or measuring that a little bit. I think we're going to continue to see Deontay Brown play. And if I were to guess, I would guess that he's going to take over for Evan Neal. And that's not a knock on Evan Neal at all. When you think about Leatherwood, Neal, Chris Owens, Landon Dickerson, Jedrick Wills, there's not one of those guys that I'm mad at. There's not one of those guys that I would say this guy does not deserve to play. There's not a single one of those. And so that makes it hard to say, well, who's Deontay gonna play for? Who's he gonna beat out? It makes it hard because none of those other guys have necessarily lost the position. I just think Deontay's better in the running game and that he's going to beat the guy out. And I think it's going to end up being Evan Neal, largely because he's a true freshman and we want to get the experience line on the field. And I think Deontay's going to do that. Will Deontay start against Texas A&M? I tell you, that's the million-dollar question. And if I had a few bucks to put down on it, I would bet that he probably does. And if he doesn't, look for him to come in early and often. And so one of two things is going to happen. He's going to come in, he's going to start for Evan Neal, and he's going to be the left guard moving forward. Or we're going to continue this weird sort of rotation where he plays a little bit of left, a little bit of right, and we have 3 guys playing the guard position. And that may work in a way that doesn't immediately hurt anybody's feelings, but that's the wrong thing we want to see. We want to see the 5 guys out there. The reason the running game – not just because the running back's hitting the hole, but the line playing better. The reason the line is playing better is because it's been the same group since about the second game, since about, I guess, really about the third game of the season, because there was injuries with Chris Owens and he missed New Mexico State. But since game three, it's been consistently the same five guys as the starters. And so if Deontay's going to come out, we really would prefer, we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, we don't want someone to feel like they lost their job, but what we want is a consistent five. And I tell you what, I would rather Deontay stay. Listen, and this is strong, right, because I've been so pro Deontay. I would rather Deontay stay on the bench and keep the solid five out there rather than this sort of jerk around with Deontay playing the right guard and then playing a little bit of left guard and three guys playing the guard positions. I would rather Deontay not play than us sort of jerk around with the interior linemen. And that's, I'm even a little bit surprised to hear me say that, but I feel very strongly about the strength of the line is the consistency of the players and the familiarity they have in playing with one another. I know I've said this on the podcast and this is a little bit cheesy, but it's true. And I agree with it. Mark Schlereth, played, he won Super Bowls with the Broncos and the Redskins. And he used to be on ESPN and he used to say, hey, look, he was on the Mike and Mike show back, you know, when that was a thing. And he used to say, look at, you know, across the offensive line, it's a group position. It's five players playing as one. And he would say, look at, if the five guys across the offensive line, if they all run the wrong play, but they all run the same wrong play, there's still a significant opportunity of success because everyone is accounted for. And so even though they're running the wrong play, as long as they're all doing it, then you're going to seal the front. If you have one guy doing one thing and four guys doing something else, then you're going to have a big gap. You're going to have a big hole for the defense. And so what that speaks to is the value or significance of the five offensive linemen working as a cohesive unit. And you can only work as a cohesive unit when you've had time working together. And so again, I'm underscoring sort of the same point, but I'd rather the same five be out there rather than us sort of, you know, lollygag around with rotating a bunch of guys for the sake of someone's feelings. Let's get the best five out there, whatever it looks like, and then keep them together so they can get better together, because they're going to get better as a unit as much as they're going to get better as individuals. Let's talk about Slade Bolden a little bit. We've got the sort of the Where Slade sort of feature. There was I didn't track him through every single special teams unit. Perhaps I need to do that. And I know that he did play on special units, but I was especially looking for him on offense. And I think in the second quarter, he came onto the field and he came into the wildcat position and Tua was lined up in the slot and Tua went into motion. And I thought, this is going to be pretty interesting. What's going to happen here with Tua in motion? Slade Bolden at the quarterback position, and it turned out Alabama called a timeout. And so I don't know if we were just showing something or if there was a misalignment, but I think it speaks to there's something to Slade being at that position, and there is the opportunity for us to see different plays or a different little package there. And the fact that we had Tua, the last couple of times Slade's lined up in the wild card, Tua has lined up out wide, almost next to the sideline, as if to say clearly, I am not in this play. But here he lined up in the slot, which is much closer to the line of scrimmage, and he went in motion back behind the line of scrimmage. And so it just speaks to, hey, there's something there. There's something that's going to happen. He's going to take the snap and pitch it to Tua, and Tua's going to throw it. There's going to be something. But I would say keep an eye on that. And so, you know, sort of the Where Slade tracker, I think it's a fun little thing, but I think there's value to it because we're going to see a sort of a unique sort of trick play at some point. Separate from that, Slade did have a carry for 5 yards, and I think he picked up a first down on another play. So that's something good to watch. Again, the Alabama offense is, 418 yards passing, 6 touchdowns. But what's interesting, we were only 6 of 12, or the Tide was only 6 of 12 on third downs. And of course, 573 total yards is just amazing. So a lot to like on offense. In terms of mini game ball, I'm going to go Kendall Rudolph. And this is the player that Tommy actually spoke to a week or so ago. He is the, I'm going to say, former offensive lineman that has changed jerseys. He's wearing number 85 now and lining up at the tight end position. So when you see just a big-ass tight end, number 85, where did this guy come from? We've not seen him sort of on the roster. And the reality is you've kind of seen him but kind of not, because there hasn't been an 85. But with Kendall Rudolph moving from offensive tackle, offensive lineman to the tight end position, I don't know if this is a permanent move, probably not, but it's an opportunity to put a big guy with beef on the field. I thought he laid some really good blocks. And at least on one occasion, maybe a couple of occasions, he actually faked the block, sort of peeled off, and ran a route. And so that's where I think that we may see something unique with Kendall Rudolph. Otherwise, we would just put him out there, as a sixth lineman. We've done that with Warmack, and so it would be nothing to see that. But to put him in a tight end number, I just think there's something to it, and so I wouldn't be surprised to see Rudolph catch a pass, especially in a short yards situation at some point. But mini game ball, tip of the cap to Kendall Rudolph there. So defense, let's flip the field a little bit. And sort of that bad taste in your mouth is giving up 31 points to Ole Miss. There's just sort of a yuck to that. Not only 31 points, but 476 yards. And just amazingly, 58 rush attempts by Ole Miss, and there's two ways to look at this. We can certainly sort of overanalyze it, and we can look at, God, 31 points, we must suck, and 476 yards. We're just, Alabama defense is just not who it needs to be. It's not who it used to be. Sort of what's going wrong. Don't like Pete Golding, yada yada yada. We can hear all of that, and that's just crap. If you could, like, as you catch that coming out of your mouth, just wad it up and throw it away, because that's just crap. If you go back to nearly, I don't want to say ever, because we've had some pretty dominant defenses under Saban, but if you go back, to nearly almost every season, there's always been some stinkers. There's always been some games where, how do we give up that many points, or how did Alabama give up that many yards, to a team? And was it Georgia State? Was it a few years ago? It wasn't Georgia State, Georgia Southern. Saban is the shit through a tin horn, game, if you will. And so we gave up almost 300 yards rushing. Almost 300 yards rushing. That's nuts. And that was a stout defense. And so you think, well, how does that happen? And so sometimes it's horses for courses. And sometimes there are just other factors. And so that's what I'm pinning this under. This is not something that I'm going to lose sleep over at all. For all the hysterics that people are going to have over this, I'm just going to kind of smile and sort of walk the other direction. And here's how I package this up. And it's sort of, it's sort of three things. Look at the offense, not just the offense that Ole Miss runs this season, but look at the offense that they ran specifically on Saturday against Alabama, where they were taking, they were pulling all stops, right? It was an all, no holds bar, right? And so they were running a spread, sort of a spread wing T offense. And I don't know, and I'm not going to call myself a big fan or follower of Ole Miss, and so I've certainly not looked at all of their games this year. However, I've seen enough of them to see where they have struggled moving the ball, and they have been more of a down-the-field passing team as opposed to sort of a spread, wing T, if you will. And so when you line up and with four or five wide receivers and then you run the quarterback quite a bit, you're really stressing the defense. And I'm not going to, sound like I'm some offensive, coordinator or defensive coordinator, sort of breaking things down. But there's a reality, four or five wides, think about the spread horizontally and vertically, you spread the defense. You've literally spread them across the field. And then with a running quarterback, that's one more offensive player that the defense has to account for, because normally you don't really account for the quarterback. They're going to pitch it. They're going to throw it. They're going to, hand it off. but they're less of a threat to run. And so with Matt Carroll being out, their starting quarterback, and John Plumlee lining up as, you know, true freshman, but, you know, still certainly an athletic cat, Ole Miss had a couple of options there to spread out and confuse the Alabama defense. And again, I think it was a lot of stuff that the defense hadn't seen before. And so we're going to spread you deep and wide with 4 and 5 wide receivers, and then we're going to run the quarterback when there's not a defender truly to account for him. And that's a good game plan, and it worked. And certainly they led the time of possession, not by much, but they did. Plumlee was – but it worked, and they scored 31 points, but there were still sort of flaws in that. I don't think that's something that they can carry through the rest of the season. You know, Plumlee was 10 of 28 passing, which that's not good numbers. Now, he did have 25 carries for 109 yards, and those are good numbers. And then, you know, Ole Miss in general, you know, had 58 rushing attempts. And so I think there's also a factor that, you know, the Alabama defense was a little bit gassed and a little bit gashed. Think about the young defensive front, and it's not excuse making, it's just a little bit of reality. And it was just a damn hot day. And so I think all of that sort of factored in, and Ole Miss put it together. They had a pretty good plan. They had 4 receivers that with catches of over 28 yards. And so Plumlee was either running or he was throwing the ball down the field. And some of those catches were just amazing grabs by the wide receivers. There were a couple of them along the sideline that I thought the ball was out. There were a couple of them that I did not think the receiver had a chance to catch the ball, and they did. And so there were some big plays. Alabama certainly has some big plays in the running game, but you can see it, you know, a mile away. The wide receiver is wide open. There's not a defender in place, and the ball from Tua is just so delicately placed in the hands of the wide receiver that you can see those big plays coming. But Ole Miss, their big plays in the passing game, you know, tight coverage along the sidelines, the ball sort of hanging up in the air, and the receiver just making an acrobatic sort of one-on-one catch. Now our DBs, the Alabama DBs, have to get a little bit better in that regard. But you know, you think about the way they sort of chucked the ball, ran the ball. There was sort of a method to their madness, if you will, and it was just enough to allow, you know, on a sort of hot day in Tuscaloosa with the young defense, the Ole Miss Rebels to rack up some yards and certainly some points. And then the other factor that I would throw out there, not just the style of play, the fact that Alabama hasn't seen it before and sort of the young, tired defense, another factor that I would put into play is a little bit of just senioritis or a little bit of, you know, spring fever. Alabama has a bye following the Ole Miss game, and there were a handful of players that were injured that have been held out. Terrell Lewis didn't play a full game. DJ Dale didn't play a full game. Both of those guys coming off various injuries, and they were held back. You know, call that a factor. And I think the rest of the team that was healthy and ready to go, they knew they were about to have some time off. And That's sort of a big deal too, because, you know, guess what? They're kind of human. They're kind of human as well. And so all of that sounds like excuse making, and that's fine if you want to treat it that way. That's not my intent. I mean, Ole Miss did what they did, and hats off to Ole Miss. I give them a lot of credit for their game plan. You know, Rich Rod up in the booth for Ole Miss. I think that was a coup for them to be able to score him as their offensive coordinator. And you know, let's not think that he didn't have a little intentionality in wanting to score some points and put some yards up against Alabama, given the fact that, you know, he had an opportunity for the Alabama job at one point. And, you know, he elected to go otherwise, but don't mistake that he's not going to have sort of a little mustard in his tank when it comes to his thoughts towards Alabama. So I take nothing against nothing away from Ole Miss. There's no sour grapes there. There's no nothing. I just think there's a little bit of explanation as to what happened, and there's a lot of reason not to get sort of angst-riddled or, you know, wrapped around the axle on this game. I don't love it, but I'm going to move on because I can rationalize it, I can understand it, and I don't think this is the full testimony of what the Alabama defense is going to be. It's going to continue continue to get better. So let me call out a couple maybe specific items. Some are good, some are sort of pretend to, you know, why we saw the yards and points. Xavier McKinney continues to be a stalwart on the defense. The fact that he had 13 tackles is, you know, anytime your safety has a bunch of tackles, that's not good for your run, you know, for your front eight. And so the fact that he did have the tackles is great. The fact that he needed to have the tackles, less great. But I continue to like Xavier McKinney. He's an asset in the secondary and certainly stepping into a box safety type role. Anthony Jennings had 9 tackles. I thought he played very, very well. I thought the run fits were off just across the board. And you could list a couple of players, a couple of names. I would say Shy Carter, and I hate to call him out because Shy, you know, you pay attention to this podcast the last couple of years. Shy Carter is one of my favorites. I say always a lot of nice things about Shy Carter. And I think sort of the other side of the coin was against Ole Miss. He missed on some run fits. And I think that I'm not going to pretend to explain why, but I think Shy probably didn't have his best game, you know, in the Crimson and White. And I certainly look forward to him rebounding from that. Shane Lee is becoming, you know, sort of a fan favorite, the true freshman playing in the middle. He is a fire plug. He is a just so solidly built. He truly, I think his nickname in high school was the Hulk, and he truly is sort of built that way. Thick thighs and a thick trunk, and a big torso, and he is a devastating middle linebacker. He is a dump truck, if you will. He's so big and so stout and such a fire plug. And if he gets a hold of you, you know, you're going to the ground. And if he hits you with your head of steam, you know, you're certainly going to feel it. But if you get him in space and you get him leaning one way and you cut back the other, then you're going to, you know, a running back or a receiver or a tight end is going to have some success if they can get, you know, Shane Lee in space and sort of get him off balance. And there were more than one play where that happened and the receiver cut back and, you know, again, commenting with the gentleman in front of me, I said, you know, that big old boy don't move. He does not move that way. He's not going to redirect himself. And so he's going to get out there. But if you cut back in on him, you know, he's going to have a gain there. And so that's something we need to be careful. And you could say, you know, Shane Lee needs to get better at that. And certainly there's the opportunity to do that. But we also, I think, as sort of the Tide defense, need to be careful about putting him in a position where he can get caught up in space. I think we're going to see, and I would say watch for this. Watch for other teams to try to exploit Shane Lee in space. And damn it, as soon as I say that, I'm not mad at the kid. I really, really like him. But watch him. Watch him play. He is a devastating tackler. He's an incredibly smart player. But he's not as nimble. He's not water bug like some other players. And so certainly watch out for that. We have seen, pay attention to prior games, we've seen other teams try to exploit him in coverage. And Shane Lee has acquitted himself well. However, you continue to understand where he may have a weakness and try to take advantage of that. And some teams are going to have success with that. I think Ole Miss did on Saturday. Again, not a knock on Shane, but just something to watch out for. DJ Dell and Terrell Lewis, again, we talked about those. They played a little bit, not necessarily the full game. And so they're going to get back healthy coming off the bye. I think this sort of this next stretch after the bye, you know, we're going to see those guys play really, really well. There was a Ben Davis sighting. He played a little bit. In fact, had a pass deflection. I was really looking forward to talking about Ben. I was really looking forward to talking about Ben Davis with Tommy on the line because Tommy last year made the comment, sort of the prediction that he thought Ben Davis was going to be a starter this year. And I thought that was you know, probably not going to happen. And I hate to sort of call that out when he's not on the line just to defend his position. But I'm sure there's listeners out there that remember Tommy having said that. And so definitely not in the starter position. But the fact that he's seeing the field, Ben Davis is certainly great to see. He's sort of a legacy and Tide fan favorite, and we want him to have a great deal of success. And so the fact that he got in, had a pass deflection, that was certainly fun. Who's a Byron Young, across the defensive front, he played early. And I was a little bit surprised that Christian Barmore didn't play more. We talked about him finishing the game super strong last week, and I expected him to see him compete more in the rotation. Didn't quite see that, but there's still opportunities for that. Mini game ball on defense. I'm going to go Christian. Christian, there's a lot of Christians. I'm going to go Christian, which is good. I'm going to go Christian Allen. He is, you know, missed all of last season with a knee injury. He played, I want to say a lot. He played quite a number of snaps, number four defensive end, as a true freshman. Last year, when he was going to have an opportunity to sort of blossom, he had a knee injury in camp. And so he is not only coming back, his youth and gaining experience, but certainly coming back from a knee injury as well. And Saturday, and he's had a couple of opportunities with Terrell Lewis being out. He's gotten significant more reps. And so I like to see him sort of develop and evolve. And I think he has an opportunity to be a really good player. On Saturday, he racked up, four tackles, a quarterback hurry, and he had, one and a half tackles for a loss. And so he was very active. And I think we have an opportunity to see not necessarily a single sort of dynamic big play that we saw from him, but the fact that he's coming back, he's getting a lot more reps with Terrell being injured, and the fact that he had a couple, stat sheet stuffer, stats there. I just want to give the tip of the cap to Christian Allen, number four defensive end. He's a player that we're going to see more and more of, not just this year, but certainly I would say the next 2 years as well. So let's switch gears to special teams. Look, I think it was very obvious that Will Reichert did not start. If you're not sort of tracking, or if you were with fans or observers that don't really track the individual kickers, and you looked at this game and you just said, the Alabama kicking game is just off and I can't put my hand on it. It's because, relative to the other games this season, Will Reichert didn't play, and he's a true freshman from Bessemer, and was the number one rated kicker coming out of high school. He handled the kickoffs. He's done punts and he's done field goals. He's really been sort of a jack of all trades, and we have missed him. And so I think we held him out. We speculated on this last week in the podcast. We held him out this week, and I imagine he'll be ready to go in 2 weeks with Texas A&M. Meanwhile, Bolivis hit all eight of his PATs, which was really good. And I don't know if Bolivis is, if he has a grandparent or his father works at ESPN, but this is the second time in a row where ESPN has recorded stats that Bolivis has gone. It was, today it said one for one on his field goals, which just ignored the fact that he did, in fact, miss a field goal. So he was actually one of two. That's the second time I've seen ESPN stats report that. Saturday against Ole Miss, he made a 36-yarder and missed a 28-yarder, and it was, it was doink-alicious. Skylar DeLong, again, I continue to swear that's the best name for a punter, but Skylar is struggling. He kicked two Saturday against Ole Miss. They averaged 30 yards and a long of 37. And so, it doesn't take a math wizard to realize, 37 is a small number. Should be 47. 57 would be a nice long. An average of above 40 is what we're looking for. But to hit two, average 30, a long of 37, that means there was a clunker in there. And so his other of his two was 37. Was 23 rather. So 37 and 23. That's the only way to get to 60. That's the only way to average 30 across two. And so two bad ones. One especially bad. Coach always says, and I believe it, that he hits the ball well in practice. And so it's just a carryover. And so something's got to sort of break through. And hopefully Banks, the special teams coach, can assist with that. When we think about special teams, we've got to talk about There's two additional plays we have to talk about. We have to talk about Waddle and the sort of the bobble on the punt return. You got to look the ball in. We said this on the podcast, and so I kind of grinned when I heard Saban say it. Saban, the most important thing on a punt return is to possess the ball. And man, how many years over the podcast have we said that? Possess the ball. That's, you know, let's do that first, and everything else is secondary. And I think Waddle was looking for a running lane. He did have some success returning the balls. No doubt that stuff that they've seen on film. And so no doubt the first opportunity he had, he wanted to cash in on all the stuff they had seen on film. He wanted to cash in on that immediately. And so he had the ball. He had the lane. He took his eye off the ball, and then he bobbled it. And what is the most Auburn thing ever? The ball pops up, and the Ole Miss guy is right there. And fortunately, ran it back for a touchdown. But fortunately, because Alabama didn't possess the ball, it was down at the point of recovery and could not be advanced. So that was certainly good. Of course, Ole Miss goes on to score from there. And speaking of defense, this at the time it happened, I was hoping certainly we'd keep them out of the end zone. You know, even a field goal, you know, certainly would have been nice. But I was thinking, you know, damn it, if they're going to go ahead and score anyways, I really would rather them have advanced the punt, because that snaps on the defense. And I know I'm sort of a weirdo about that kind of stuff, but I think we had 88 snaps, 86, 88 snaps, whatever the number was, defensive snaps against Ole Miss. And a couple of weeks ago against South Carolina, you know, we were north of 80 snaps on the defense, and we really need that number to be back in the 50s. And so that's, you know, the defense collected another couple of snaps there because we didn't possess the ball on punting. And so that's a big play. I don't want to underemphasize that. There's significance to that. Of course, Waddle, I think, acquitted himself well the rest of the game with his possessing the kicks. And he almost broke a couple of them. So it was good to see there was something there. Clearly there was something there. But again, you got to possess the ball. And then the other special team play that I would go for is the blocked punt. Ali Kaho, or Kaho, that was a phenomenal play. He made the block. Looks like Terrell Shavers was going to recover it, but the ball sort of popped up, and Ali was able to pick that up for the recovery in the end zone. And again, I'll sort of go weirdo on you, but there's a part of me that wished that they could have just blocked the ball and recovered it at the 10 and then give the defense an opportunity to sit out a couple of plays while the offense punched it in. But the fact that we recovered it in the end zone meant that we kicked off to them, and the defense that had just gotten Ole Miss off the field had to go back on the field. And so I guess that was the reward for having blocked a punt, is putting the defense back on the field. Obviously, the 7 points is great. I'm not arguing to get 7 points. Just sometimes there's weird little things like that I look at and say, I'd rather save some plays on the defenses rather than get some additional rest. But, you know, what do you do? So next week, so let's hit up a couple other little targets, topics that I have lined up. So next week is a bye. And so we always talk about when the bye. Let's not get somebody arrested. Let's not do anything stupid. Let's not get anyone injured in practice. And so truly, let's Alabama win the bye so that we come back for this next phase of the season. And I'll tell you what, this season really stacks up really uniquely. And it's unique in that Alabama has two byes this season. And I assume probably most teams do. And I think it has, you know, there's a rotation. How many Saturdays exist sort of in the fall window. And I don't know sort of calendar math, but I think every few years there's an extra Saturday that sort of cycles through. And this happens to be one of those seasons. And so we've played five games and we get a bye. Think about it, normally we don't get the bye until after the Tennessee game. And so Alabama has played eight games before we get the bye. And we've seen that really be grueling on the team. I'll go back to, was it 2009, when Lane Kiffin led Tennessee, almost beat us, and if it weren't for a couple of kicks. And that was the eighth or ninth game in the season that Alabama played before they got the bye. The team was just gassed, you know, heavy leg. You could see it. And so this season, we have an opportunity to play five games, go into a bye, play three more. We'll play A&M, Tennessee, and Arkansas, have a second bye, and then we'll finish the season with LSU, Mississippi State, Western Carolina, and Auburn. And so this is a very, very unique setup that we don't see very often. So I think, you know, it's sort of survive in advance. All we got to do is make the four. And I think that's sort of a mentality that I think Saban is sort of rolling out. And so we've held guys out. We've done different things with guys, you know, maybe relative to what we've seen with Saban before. But I think the team's going to rest, recuperate, get right. We're going to start to see a little bit more. You know, I think we're going to sort of narrow our bench a little bit, especially knowing that we've got another bye a little coming up. But we're going to knock out these three, you know, conference games. I think A&M is going to be a little bit tough. I think Tennessee less so, Arkansas, you know, less so. Then have a bye before we really get into the meat sandwich, you know, of the schedule. And I'm thinking primarily LSU, Mississippi State, and Auburn, and then that would go right into the SEC championship. So I think we're going to have an opportunity to be fresher later in the season than we have before. So that's what I got to say about that. This weekend in Tuscaloosa, you know, and I talked about a little bit about this, hit up Sessions Bar, and I'll tell them myself a little bit. I hit them up Friday night as well as Saturday. That's a really cool place. More of a high-end, I don't want to say high-end, but more, it's not a beer-slinging, you know, bar. It's a nice, you know, marble-topped bar, you know, custom cocktails. It's a really sort of, I call it a classy joint, if you will. It's worth going in and checking it out. I had interacted with some of the owners on Facebook before, you know, trying to figure out when they were going to open and all that stuff, and was able to meet them in person. Again, Friday and Saturday night, seems like a really, really good crew. I think the owner is called a seasoned bartender, in Tuscaloosa, worked at you know, sort of the head bartender, at a number of places and stretching out on his own, which is reason enough to support someone that's taking a stretch like that. So super hats off to, Sessions Bar. And I'll tell you, the old fashioned made with Clyde Mays, you got to try that. That's phenomenal. I don't know if it's called the Oyster House or the Oyster Bar. I don't know that I would go back there, but did dinner there Saturday night. I think that was all right. And then, again, I just want to give a super shout-out, level of appreciation to all those that are participating in the listener support campaign. You know, I appreciate Chris kind of calling us out. Hey, I've signed up for this thing, but I haven't really seen, you know, anything come from it. So, you know, number one, thank you for the support. Our level of appreciation is just off the charts. It really is. We're humbled and honored. But, you know, we want to get you some stuff too, all of you. And so we have you know, some ideas for some written content. In fact, a little bit I've kind of put together, and then I have probably two or three or four audio ideas that I want to put out there. That will release only to this, to the support campaign participants. And so if you are not yet one of those, head over to Alabama Football Podcast and look for the listener support campaign. There are low cost opportunities to do that. And so not only our huge appreciation, but we're about to have some content that we're going to start releasing to that group. We're going to get into these next phases of the season. And, you know, look for opportunities to do stuff with you, you know, in Tuscaloosa, have a meetup, and certainly an opportunity to share some seats and share some tickets with some folks as well. So I think that wraps up what I had for this show. Probably went a little longer than I thought it would, with it being just me. I appreciate you kind of suffering through. I'll kind of share. I was talking about Bill earlier. We kind of joked, cause we were having just a good time sort of getting to know one another, but I shared a little bit sort of behind the scenes, information, and we'll do this in a meetup sometime about, you know, Tommy and I getting together and recording, the show, and sometimes schedules sort of get in the way. And so unplanned, ironically, we have one of those shows where, I'm riding solo for many of the same types of reasons that, that we kind of kidded about on Saturday. So tip of the cap to, you know, sort of referencing back to that conversation. And certainly, again, I just a great time that that represented. But I think that's a, I think that's what we've got. I think we're going to have some additional content coming out to the listener support campaign. If you've not done that, definitely head out to Alabama Football Podcast and sign up there. If you are a frequent and loyal listener on iTunes, we would appreciate some additional reviews. I think the last reviews that we have on iTunes sort of called us out for our review of the Clemson game. And so we'd like to get some new reviews that sort of supplant those in the most recent. So maybe head out to iTunes and give us a review, give us a shout out. We'd certainly appreciate it. Hit us up on Facebook. You know, look us up on Facebook. We're AlabamaFootballPodcast.com. And you can hit us up on email as well, AlabamaFootballPodcast@gmail.com. And with that, the famous words that roll us out, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at AlabamaFootballPodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.